What did you make of the OC for the Bears, Shane Waldron's media session on Thursday? Specifically, how about what he had to say about running the ball out of the shotgun near the goal line? The Bears have had 9 plays inside the 5-yard line this season, all 9, 6 runs, 3 passes out of shotgun.
I think when you're in the shotgun in the low red zone there, you obviously present the option of the quarterback to run it right there. I know that when it comes down, everyone will want to talk about it and ask about it. The fourth down call right there where it didn't work out after we had some interior runs. You know, I know for me, you know, I can't look back at the past in that negative light. I got to look back in the past and live in the present, be better for us, learn from it, and improve there. But in terms of being in the gun versus being under center, you know, there's different styles or both. And I know when you present that extra element, because in the low red zone, defense has that extra hat down there. Quarterback in the gun now presents that opportunity.
What did you make of that?
Well, it was rambling. I understand that he had to get into the fourth down play. I think if you take that out, what he said was very revealing, just in terms of the way that he's looking at the game of football. The fact that they have run out of the shotgun as many times as they had in that element makes you understand that he believes the threat of a quarterback run is going to slow down the defense. That's what he's looking for. But they didn't run the quarterback. But that's what he believes will prevent the defense from being able to load up and just sort of that quarterback RPO at inside the 5 makes the quarterback more dangerous, puts them off balance. That's what he's saying. He when he talked about the fourth down thing and living in the present and living in the moment, he did say that he has to be better at that. He also said what he said he had to be better at that, he was referring to something that Caleb Williams talked about at the in the post game. Caleb Williams was asked if he could check out of that play, and he said he could. But he said he got the play late, and by the time they broke the huddle, they were lined up and it was either you try to check out of the play and you're going to have a delay of game. And he thought it was better to run the play. So I think when he says he's got to be better, I don't think that has anything to do about operating under center. I think it has to do with getting the play in earlier so that the possible check out is available to the quarterback rather than having him at the line of scrimmage with time winding down, trying to get the ball snapped for a play that was doomed to fail. And that's kind of what Eberflus said when he said, we like that play, and if it was set up right, it would have worked. It wasn't set up right. They didn't have enough time to check out of it, and the play was a disaster. But I guess what I'm saying is Shane Waldron is a guy that likes to run out of the shotgun and feels the element of the quarterback on an RPO will slow down the defense, which certainly has yet to happen.
How many RPOs have we actually seen when the quarterback's actually taken off with the ball? Not nearly enough. I mean,
not maybe, enough to set up that play.
Right, yeah. Exactly right. So you can say all that, but until your quarterback is willing to put his body on the line, and I guess Caleb's not willing to do that. I mean, I appreciate the fact that he's throw first and not run first. But again, I know I keep harping on that play and the hunting for field goals. I guess the Giants were hunting for field goals last night, if all those field goals the Giants kicked on Thursday Night Football. But I was happy to hear Shane Waldron say that on the failed fourth and one that I have to be better. So good. I'm glad he can admit that he has to be better.
Why is anybody talking about Caleb Williams as a runner? I don't understand how that became part of the conversation or why. So there will be a lot of, and there already has been, a lot of attention paid how Shane Waldron delivered what he said, and a lot of focus on the style and the inelegant clumsiness, whatever you want to use to describe it. I don't want to get caught up in that. I think the mockery is unsavory. It's not really productive either or professional. I do think the substance of what he said was more troubling to me, because I don't know where this is coming from, that Shane Waldron wants to make Caleb Williams into an RPO guy. Did I miss that? When did that happen? Because isn't the arm talent the thing? Isn't behind center the thing? nine straight snaps out of the shotgun, and you're inside, you're in the red zone. That to me is an egregious failure of what you were supposed to do and why you were brought here.
You're in the low red zone.
You're within sniffing distance, and you're still going out of the shotgun. So when you talk about the identity and the Bears' lack of an identity three games into the season, we heard why. So the substance of what he said was troubling. The style is kind of irrelevant. You want to instill confidence, sure. You want to have composure, absolutely. That's more of a problem, I think, with the locker room and credibility than it might be outside of the locker room with us. But I just didn't hear anything that made you feel much better about the Bears' commitment to establishing an identity that makes sense here in Chicago. Given the talent, you need to devise your scheme and game plans around the talent you have, not the other way around.
Oh boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs, Biggs Time, 7 a.m. with Mully and Haw. How should we interpret Mercedes Lewis' comments about Shane Waldron that bring into question how authoritative the offensive coordinator really is?
So sometimes as a coach coming in, you may be walking on eggshells, and I just kind of put that to bed. Like, it's not, nobody's sensitive in here. You know, we want to win games just as bad as you do, and it's a collaborative effort in everything. This is not Pop Warner. You know, this is, we work together side by side to get things done. And yeah, that's really what my message was.
So nobody should be walking on eggshells.
So if I'm interpreting this correctly, and I think that we are, Shane Waldron praised a meeting with the leadership committee that included Mercedes Lewis, who went in there and basically told his coach, Shane Waldron, to start coaching them, be tougher with them, stop tiptoeing around and being tentative. Okay. This is a problem. This is a problem three games in. You don't want to be having these conversations three games into the season. Now, if it were anybody but a guy who's in his 19th NFL season and has had his share of coaching conversations and knows what leadership looks like and sounds like and knows what a competent offense looks like and feels like, it might not be as big of a concern. But when you're Mercedes Lewis, and the only reason, the biggest reason you were brought back to Chicago was because of your leadership, because of your know-how, and because of your example, then when you're sitting there in front of the other fellow leaders on your team telling the coach, the offensive coordinator, to stop walking on eggshells and to coach us like dudes, I don't know if the Bears are headed in the right direction as much as I was convinced they were 3 weeks ago, or maybe 8 days ago. What happened in Indianapolis shook the confidence of everybody in the organization and maybe the fan base. And I think we heard yesterday why that's not an exaggeration.
Hey, Mercedes, talk less, block more, know the snap count.
Well, that was well said.
I love that.
Yeah, I think... I look, the Shane Waldron thing is kind of a nightmare. It's shaken your confidence for a reason. Listening to him, he doesn't seem like he's brimming with confidence. He doesn't seem like he's got all the answers, and he doesn't seem like he has the respect of the players. So it's all a problem.
Yes. Hey, well, here's another question.
Voice of Mark Grody's here at 8:25 on Fridays to give us all the news and nuggets from up at Halas Hall all week long. Plus, this might be something we talk about. How do you believe the Bears' offensive line will line up from left to right Sunday for the game against the Rams at Soldier Field?
I believe that they will line up exactly the same way as they did in the last game. I think that they're going to play the right tackle, Darnell Wright. I think he'll play. I think Matt Pryor is the new right guard. I think he'll play Coleman Shelton, Tevin Jenkins, and Braxton Jones. I know there are a lot of moving pieces and a lot of injuries connected to all those names, and guys cannot make it through an entire practice both days during the week, but I believe that's how they're going to line it up.
I agree with what Mully just said there. And hey, how about this? Nate Davis, a full participant on a Thursday practice. Good for you, Nate.
Well, if he's participating fully, then that means he's healthy.
Well, it means that, to me, it means that he's actually been kind of woken up a little bit.
Okay.
Right?
So
message sent, message received.
Well, if message is received, then I think that you need to start him again.
Over.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that if he is healthy enough, last week was okay. You had maybe an opportunity to use the injury as a crutch, but you could maybe kind of sort of, it sounds like they're wishy-washy in every message they send with the coaching staff, but you were kind of saying, well, in the ode to accountability, let's start Pryor over Nate Davis, but he's kind of hurt. This week, there's no question. If he's healthy, he's got to play. At some point, Nate Davis has got to be the guy that you're paying him all the money to be. So this is as good a week as any to start that process. You're going to need Matt Pryor at some point as backup depth
right.
to Darnell Wright
right.
at right tackle. Maybe the Braxton Jones at left tackle. Yep. I think Matt Pryor is your super sub. He's your sixth man, if you will, literally, but not in the sense like he's coming off the bench in basketball and shooting three-pointers. But he's the guy that can play three different roles. So Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, Coleman Shelton against his old team. Give Nate Davis a start and hope that it's different because of the lesson hopefully he has learned. And then I think Darnell Wright is going to try to play through whatever pain and injury he's going through.
I could argue they should start Richard Matt Pryor and Bill Murray because the whole thing's going to be a comedy of errors anyway.
That would be a good line.
You know, that's a good question.
That's a good comment. That's a good question. And that's Ron Coomer, who is an overall great guy. He'll be here at 8 talking Cubs baseball. How do you explain the Bears suffering through a disastrous change in the injury report that we got on Thursday? Safety Kevin Byard out with a back. Wide receiver Rome Odunze limited with a hip. Defensive tackle Andrew Billings kind of unsung, downgraded with a knee, didn't practice. Keenan Allen still limited with the heel, but right tackle Darnell Wright, he got up there, upgraded from out to limited with that back.
Yeah, he's limited with the back, and if they go Mully's route and they have to go with Richard Pryor and Bill Murray, I think everyone would be a little stir crazy. I don't know if this injury issue is as different from other teams. It just is the NFL. I mean, yeah. There are some prizes on there, but I didn't do a deep dive into what the Packers are dealing with. They're without their starting quarterback still. Or how about the Lions? Are they banged up? Probably. Every team is going to
the
be banged
Rams.
Up. Look at the Rams. The Rams are coming to town without their top two wide receivers who would be Pro Bowl caliber players and are, but they're missing. The Vikings are doing it without who? So it's like people want to make a big deal in whatever locality they're at because their team is banged up, but it happens in every NFL city. I'm most concerned about the names on this list. Kevin Byard, at this age, he doesn't miss time. So the him being on there, maybe we shouldn't worry, or is it the time that maybe we should start to? I worry about Andrew Billings because he is somebody who was downgraded in that knee issue for a man that big.
And Zach Pickens is hurt, right? I'm not that they're comparable, but that's the backup.
They're not comparable, but I think Andrew Billings is indispensable, and that's why you worry about him popping up there. And Keenan Allen, that's going to be an ongoing conversation because he is 33 years old, and he has yet to really contribute in a meaningful way. So until he's off the injury list, I think we're going to wonder how much he's being limited by the injury.
Yeah, the two names that stick out the most is Andrew Billings being put on this list. They need Andrew Billings if they want to win on Sunday. And again, Keenan Allen, limited. Again, he knows what he's doing. Does he need to be out there? But is he building a rapport with Caleb Williams? Is Caleb Williams willing to get him the ball when they haven't played a whole lot of catch in practice together?
I can't wait until you tell off Keenan Allen the way you told off Mercedes Lewis.
Jump off sides, Keenan, and you can also endure the wrath.
I got to tell you, like, there are three names on here that are disturbing, and they're the three new names, right? Keenan Allen, limited, that's expected. Rome Odunze, limited, that's a new one. I thought they were taking extra practice time. I thought they had the 10 extra plays. If you're limited, you can't do that, right? But you are so right. Andrew Billings is the most unsung essential player on the roster. And he's the guy that you must have in order to be able to play good defense for the Chicago Bears. They really need him healthy. He's the guy that forced the fumble when they need it. I mean, he makes a ton of really good plays and is a really important player. If he's out, the drop-off is like a cliff, for God's sake. And Kevin Byard, that's a new name. That's a guy, as you mentioned, who never misses time, is always available. Now we can't practice in the middle of a week on game week. I mean, I don't know what that means, but that's a bothersome one. And anyone who has back injuries or ever been through a back injury, your back locks up on you, you're of no value to anyone. I mean, it's a really difficult thing to deal with. So that was really upsetting to see. Again, I think the Billings was like the spit take, where you're, you know, sitting down and, oh, let's see what's happening. That one will stop you cold.
Oh, my God, what a question. What a question.
That's the voice of Joe Fortenbaugh. He'll be here right around 7:40. Get the pencil out. Get the paper out. Prediction time. Could you please pick one of the three big games in college football? Louisville, Notre Dame, Illinois, Penn State, Georgia, Alabama, and make one prediction. Which of the three will have the biggest impact on the national title chances, and which team can most impact its chances with a victory?
This is a good question because those are big games. I'm going to go, and I know this is a mistake, I'm going with Alabama winning at home. Alabama is, believe it or not, 5-1 at home against Georgia, which I had to double-check that statistic because it feels like Georgia has had their number, and I think it's really interesting that there's no Nick Saban, and here's Kirby Smith, and what a shock. Wait a minute, who are you? And Kalen DeBoer, this is kind of his coming out party. He wants to get the ball down the field. He's got a quarterback that can do it. He's got a young receiver that can do it. Georgia, as good as they are, might not be the entity that they were. And this could be a real chance for Alabama, so I'll take Alabama. I like, in order, I like Notre Dame, I like Illinois to cover, and I like Alabama to win.
Yeah, Alabama, Mully, to your point, they're getting a point and a half at home, so if you do like Alabama, maybe you go money line or take the point and a half, or wow, even do what I love to do is a teaser and move that thing up to over a touchdown. So that's a game that you're really going to want to watch. Of course, I'm really interested in the Notre Dame game. They don't deserve, they're not a team that should be playing in the national championship tournament at the end of the year, at least at this point. The quarterback, totally overvalued. Maybe the coach is the problem. Maybe he's overvalued. Notre Dame's a hefty favorite too in this game, which I'm surprised, according to our friends over at Circus Sports Illinois, just shot a touchdown right now. -7 Notre Dame as I'm checking it as we're doing this. Notre Dame -7 against Louisville, I don't like, but Notre Dame's got the most to lose. If they lose this game, they're done. I think Georgia and Alabama could survive a loss if it's a close game. And listen, Illinois could ruin Penn State's season with a win. But the game that I'll be most watching from my fandom standpoint is Louisville-Notre Dame at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I understand that. Georgia-Alabama definitely has the makings, though, of being the best and most impactful game in college football this weekend for obvious reasons. I think the winner will go into third place in the NFC South. I mean, they could be that good this year. But Georgia will go into Tuscaloosa and win. Kirby Smart has his team playing, understanding what is at stake. I don't think it's the same Alabama team. The Saban factor, yeah, I think that can't be overlooked, especially with this group of players. Might take a season to get used to some things. That's not it's not a criticism of DeBoer. I think he's a tremendous coach, but he's changing a lot of things. And you think that Jalen Milroe is a tremendous college football quarterback. I just don't know if they're going to be able to beat Georgia in this setting and under these circumstances. So that's going to be the biggest national game. I would like to see Notre Dame hold off Louisville. I don't have a lot of confidence in their ability to play at that high of a level at home. For whatever reason, Notre Dame, and this goes back a long way now. I just feel like there's Notre Dame football games tend to be like museum tours. And the fan base is there or it's a destination place, it doesn't have the same kind of atmosphere that you're going to see in Tuscaloosa or maybe in some Big Ten settings, the Big House or Penn State maybe. I just don't always sense that is going to be a, is not as big of a home field advantage as it should be historically. And I always wonder why. I don't have a lot of faith in Marcus Freeman this week. So I think Notre Dame will win, but I don't think it'll be impressive. And Illinois will make it competitive, but I think that's a tough challenge to go into State College and to beat that team.
They 18 may, and a half?
They may cover. I think they will cover, but I don't think that they're going to win.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
All right, what do you think of the news overnight? Sky firing coach Teresa Witherspoon after just one season. How much of the early season momentum and then interest remained in the Sky franchise that arguably keeps getting harder to like? Did they ask Angel Reese before they did this?
Apparently not, because of her reaction implies that this was a surprise to her and a disappointment. I think that it would be disingenuous of me to come off as some sort of Chicago Sky expert, not having watched most of their games and not being somebody that has been that invested emotionally in what's going on over there. That said, I have respected the fact that it's created some excitement in Chicago. There is a fan base that is growing, but I don't think they've taken advantage as a franchise of the goodwill, especially in this season, which is 2024, the year of women's basketball. And I just don't think they've seized the opportunity well enough. It's a hard team to watch. Because it's hard to like and embrace. They seem to like and lean into the villain role. That's okay. But I think first you have to be successful to be vilified and to take pride in that. Firing Teresa Witherspoon late on a Thursday night seems as clumsy as everything else that they have done in the past 6 months or so. They're going to announce it officially today. They've got issues with players wanting traded. They've got issues with attracting free agents. Now they've got an unhappy superstar in Angel Reese. They've got a lot of problems. I don't know how they solve them, and I don't know what they're missing with Teresa Witherspoon, because they did not have a very good season in the final analysis, so maybe she did have to go. But hiring and looking for your fourth coach in 2 years, not a way to establish stability.
The franchise, apparently, after reading the Sun-Times this morning, Annie Constable's story, she's been a guest of yours a couple of times on the Sky. She is a Sky expert. They just can't attract free agents. People don't want to come to this organization and play here. Not 100% sure why. They keep burning through the coaches. Also, it's saying that on the exit interviews, players didn't like the idea that they changed playing style throughout the year. So there wasn't an identity, right? We're talking about the Bears and not having an offensive identity. Apparently, the Sky didn't have an identity. And we'll have to wait and see. Angel Reese is a lightning rod. And if she really feels this strongly about this, I'm really curious how negatively this could affect other free agents coming to play here and her just counting the days until she can get the hell out of here.
Didn't she just say earlier this week that she took pride in being a recruiter for free agents?
On her exit interview, right?
Well, that's
her exit Zoom with
reporters. So now, does that change because they fired her coach?
Have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was really, it's a surprising story. I didn't know she was in trouble. I'm like you, David. I watched a few of their games. I didn't watch the entire season, but they totally, they definitely created interest this year. I was kind of trying to keep up with what they were doing. I think it's kind of strange that they got rid of the coach without knowing any of the bad. I didn't see this one coming, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It seems like it's, if I had known that they were evaluating her in that way, and then maybe you look at the end of the year, maybe you have a different feeling. Like I said, 3-13 in the second half of the season. It's not like they had a great year.
No, it's not.
But they did have some injuries.
They started strong, though.
They had some player movement. They were waiting on different people, and then obviously Angel Reese was not available at the end of the season. Her stuff on Twitter, I was floored by that. I was really surprised to see Angel Reese on Twitter. And then people are nitpicking her. She said, "I came here for you," and immediately there's a pushback. You came here because they drafted you, and That's true. They traded up to draft her. But it felt like they had flaws as a team from Jump Street, right? They did not have the scoring, the shooting that you would associate with what's needed with two young players inside that are getting rebounds and scoring points in the interior.
They're still there.
Yeah, I thought the roster flaws were as bad as any coaching flaws. And I'm not claiming that Teresa Witherspoon was the best coach in the league or anything like that. Obviously, they fired her for a reason. I just didn't see it coming.
I wonder if now Angel Reese's college coach, Kim Mulkey, becomes a candidate.
I wonder if she'd want her.
Dun, dun, dun.
Do you know that they have a relationship that would...
I don't. I'm just speculating.
Yep. And
That's based on nothing, by the way. Okay. That's just because of the connection with Angel Reese.
But I also wonder about how college coaches do in the WNBA versus the NBA. College coaches have struggled coming from as much power as they have.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'm staying in my lane here. I don't know exactly if that's how big of a transition it is and if it's similar to the men's game where we have seen coaches struggle going from college to the NBA.
Yeah, so it's a different animal. Maybe. I don't know either, David.
But you're the one pushing
Kim Mulkey.
Yeah, I asked the question. It's a rhetorical one.
You played music.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 for drama.
Okay.
I like drama. Dustin likes drama.
On the score.